The world is changing so fast, isn't it?
It really is. Relentless.
And young people today are facing, well, a whole new set of challenges, these new challenging times.
Mm-hmm.
So the big question is, how's education keeping up?
Yeah, that's what we're really digging into today.
Exactly. We've got this really interesting keynote presentation. It's on bilingual education, actually, from May 9th, 2025. So quite forward-looking.
Okay. And we're bringing in other research, too.
Yeah, layering in insights on kids' well-being, emotional, physical, how their brains are working, cognitive function, you know, and the latest educational innovations.
Right. So kind of a 360-degree view.
That's the idea. The mission for this deep dive is to really get a handle on the key shifts happening in education and, well, what they actually mean for learners navigating this pretty complex world.
Okay. Well, to understand today, sometimes you need to look back a bit, right?
Good point.
It's interesting. The keynote mentions the mid-90s, around 94, 95. That was a time of a real educational shakeup.
Ah, yeah, the birth of CLIL, Content and Language Integrated Learning.
Exactly. That felt like a big deal then, a new way of thinking.
Now.
Yeah.
How does that contrast with today's concerns?
Well, now we're hearing different things. Concerns about, you know, declining scores in maths, reading, science. Across many OECD countries, The Atlantic reported on that.
Right. So CLIL was maybe the start of something.
Kind of. It was one example, maybe an early one, of this broader wave of innovative, integrated curricula that we're seeing now.
Okay. So things like STEM or STEAM.
Yeah. And project-based learning, PDL. Environmental education, design thinking, global citizenship.
Even how subjects like health and phys ed or maths and music or coding are being woven in.
Right. They're all different in substance, obviously, but the keynote suggests they share similar pedagogical pathways, similar ideas underneath.
Interesting. And what are those underlying ideas? The presentation mentions a shift, doesn't it? Something about KSA versus ASK.
Yes. That's a really crucial point. We used to talk a lot about KSA knowledge, skills, attitudes. That was order. But now there's this noticeable shift or proposed shift towards ASK attitudes first, then skills, then knowledge.
Attitude, skills, knowledge. Huh. Why flip the order like that?
Well, it really makes you think, doesn't it? What's most fundamental for learners today?
Yeah, it does make you wonder. Maybe. Maybe it's because the world's changing so fast. So having the right attitude, like curiosity, being adaptable, resilience, maybe that's the foundation now.
That could be it. And then the skills, critical thinking, collaboration, those become the tools to navigate everything.
And knowledge, while obviously still vital, maybe it's seen as something you build on top of that foundation. Easier to acquire and use if you've got the right mindset and skills.
It's a compelling way to frame it. And to understand why this shift might be happening, the keynote points to a pretty pivotal year, 2010.
Right. Described as the year social media mainstreamed.
It's quite striking when you list what came out around then. You had the iPad.
The iPhone 4 with the front-facing camera. Hello, selfies.
Exactly. The selfie camera, Instagram launching, Facebook and Twitter just exploding.
Plus gaming. Things like the Xbox evolving.
It was this perfect storm, this convergence of technologies that just fundamentally changed how we connect, how we get information, how we spend our time.
And the keynote asks this really blunt question, doesn't hold back. The arrival of the smartphone rewired an entire generation. What did we think would happen to them?
Yeah. It's powerful. It forces you to think beyond just the convenience and connection. What were the deeper consequences?
And we actually have some data points here from FT Monitoring the Future 2022 that try to quantify this rewiring.
Yes, those figures are, well, they're eye-opening.
Like average hours per week on screen.
We're talking upwards of 40 hours, 40 plus.
Wow. And the number of devices nearby.
Usually 3 or 4, close at hand.
And unlocks per day. How many times do they pick up the phone?
Around 150 times a day. Think about that fragmentation of attention.
And then there's the quality of the content, which is a whole other issue for 2025.
Yeah.
And this constant multitasking.
Right. Trying to juggle 3, 4, 5 things at once. That's become the norm.
And this constant digital buzz, it doesn't happen in a vacuum, does it? The keynote links it directly to other trends.
Exactly. Trends in how young people are thinking and how they're sleeping, citing OECD and PISA data from 2023.
So how might all this screen time actually be impacting thinking and sleep?
Well, think about attention. If it's constantly being split, constantly interrupted, it gets harder to sustain focus for deep work, for deep learning.
Like trying to follow 5 conversations at once. You catch bits, but not the whole picture.
Precisely. And sleep, The blue light from screens is known to mess with our natural sleep cycles, our melatonin production.
Making it harder to fall asleep, affecting sleep quality.
Which then knocks onto cognitive function the next day. It's a cycle.
And it's not just cognitive. The keynote brings in physical well-being too, right? Referencing that huge study.
Yeah, nearly 8 million test results across 34 countries. The Fitback Network data, Ortega and colleagues.
And then there's the mental health aspect. Data from the US CDC in 2024 showing rises in anxiety, hopelessness.
Mm-hmm. And in Finland, the THL notes this increased focus on stress resistance in conditions like ADHD.
So it's this backdrop of tech reshaping things, potentially impacting kids physically, mentally, cognitively, which leads to this idea in the keynote about changing spaces.
Yes, the social and psychological spaces where young people learn and ideally thrive.
Okay, so what do they mean by social space?
That's basically the relational environment, how kids interact with each other, with teachers, the whole community feel.
And psychological space.
That's more internal, the emotional, the cognitive environment within the learner, how they feel, how they're thinking while they learn.
And the digital world obviously shapes both of those spaces profoundly.
Absolutely. Online interactions become a huge part of the social space. And the constant information, the comparisons, that really impacts the internal psychological state.
And within that psychological space, there's this critical concept, executive function. Mm-hmm. Can you break that down for us? Why is it so important now?
Sure. Executive function is, it's like the management system of the brain. It's a set of cognitive skills that help us organize ourselves, manage our thoughts and actions to reach goals.
Okay, like what specific skills?
The keynote highlights key ones. Attention, simply being able to focus. Inhibition, that's self-control, resisting distractions or impulses.
Crucial in a world full of pings and notifications.
Definitely. Then there's working memory, holding information in your mind and being able to work with it.
Like remembering instructions or doing mental math.
Exactly. And flexible thinking, the ability to adapt, switch perspectives, change strategies when something isn't working.
So attention, inhibition, working memory, flexible thinking. You can see how vital those are for learning and just for navigating life today.
More critical than ever with all the information overload and constant distractions.
So what weakens these functions? What makes them harder?
Well, the keynote points to things we often experience. Chronic stress, anxiety.
Which the digital world can sometimes amplify.
It can. Also, ambiguity, uncertainty, just being tired, and significantly cognitive load, trying to process too much information at once.
Okay, so what strengthens them? What can we do to build up these executive functions?
Good news is we can strengthen them. Supportive environments are key, both social and psychological.
Feeling safe, connected.
Yes. Also, activities that involve active learning, learning by doing, practicing metacognition, literally thinking about how you think and learn.
Being more self-aware as a learner.
Exactly. And perhaps, obviously, limiting screen time and overstimulation. Getting enough sleep, physical activity. These basics are fundamental.
And motivation, right? Feeling like the learning matters.
Absolutely. Motivation, relevance, and giving learners agency, a sense of control over their learning.
There's a powerful metaphor used in the keynote. High performance engines, poor steering skills.
Yes, followed by the translation. Young hearts on the road, engines roar with might, and speed hands untrained to steer.
It really hits home, doesn't it? This idea of having all this potential, this processing power, maybe, but lacking the skills to direct it effectively.
It captures that tension perfectly. Incredible capacity, but maybe underdeveloped navigational skills for this new terrain.
How does something like a decline in creative thinking fit in here? Does that hinder the steering?
That's a really interesting connection. If you think of divergent thinking coming up with lots of different ideas, possibilities as part of those steering skills,
yeah,
then a decline there could limit your ability to adapt, to solve new problems creatively. The world throws curveballs, right? You need more than just finding the one right answer sometimes.
You need to be able to generate options, think outside the box.
That makes sense. Okay, let's shift gears slightly. What about language learning? Where does learning an additional language fit into this picture?
This is a fascinating part of the keynote. It argues that learning another language isn't just, you know, useful for travel or getting a job. It actually changes the brain.
How so? It impacts the brain's neurocircuitry, its wiring, and its neuroplasticity, the brain's amazing ability to reorganize itself, form new connections.
So it physically changes the brain.
Yes. And the keynote mentions that these changes, like shifts in electrical activity, might happen even earlier in the learning process than we used to think.
Wow. So what are some concrete benefits?
Okay. Well, one big one is superior working memory,
which we just said is a key part of executive function.
Exactly. So language learning directly boosts a core executive skill. And by boosting working memory, it can also help with attention span. It connects to both memory for events, episodic, and general knowledge semantic memory.
Good. Better working memory, better attention. What else?
Enhanced problem solving and critical thinking skills, especially, it seems, in situations that are really cognitively demanding.
So it's like a workout for the brain, making it stronger for tough tasks.
You could put it that way, yeah. It also seems to improve perception and thinking skills more broadly. It leads to greater situational adaptability and something called multifocusing.
Multifocusing.
Yeah, essentially being better able to see things from different perspectives. The keynote says, seeing the world through different lenses, language gives you new structures, new ways to categorize the world.
That's really interesting. Another benefit mentioned is filtering information.
Yes, better filtering, which ties back to executive function and specifically inhibitory control.
The ability to ignore distractions.
Right. So language learning can help reduce that feeling of cognitive overload by making you better at tuning out the noise.
That sounds incredibly useful today. Are there social benefits too?
Definitely. Enhanced interpersonal skills. It can actually reduce social comparison stress, maybe because you gain perspective.
Huh. How?
Well, learning a language often involves understanding different cultural norms and ways of communicating. This fosters a better understanding of communicative needs, sensitivity to context.
And empathy.
And empathy, yes. Seeing things from another's viewpoint.
Okay, and one more. Yeah. Improved interpretation of information.
Yes, and related critical thinking, like understanding that words can have multiple meanings depending on context, identifying ambiguity, reading between the lines, understanding subtext.
All really sophisticated skills, vital for navigating information today. So, if language learning has all these cognitive and social benefits, what does that mean for teaching, for pedagogy?
Well, the keynote really pushes for providing rich opportunities for communication using multiliteracies.
Multiliteracies. Okay, what does that mean exactly?
It means going beyond just traditional reading, writing, and speaking. It's about interpreting and creating meaning using all sorts of communication forms.
Like text, images, video.
That digital media, sound, all the ways we actually communicate now.
Yeah.
It's about valuing all these different ways of making and sharing meaning.
So it sounds like we need to stop treating technology use as separate from real learning and actually integrate it meaningfully.
Precisely. Bring students' digital lives into the classroom in a productive way.
Now, the keynote also brings up that concerning trend about creativity declining as kids get older.
Yes. The NASA study from way back in 1968, and Sir Ken Robinson talked about this a lot.
Showing that huge drop in divergent thinking, the idea generation skill, from like 98% in 4 to 5 year olds.
Down to 30% by age 10 and only 12% by age 15.
That's a massive drop. Compared to convergent thinking, which is finding the single right answer.
Right. Convergent thinking tends to be emphasized more as kids get older in many systems.
So how can we nurture that psychological space in education to maybe counteract this trend, to keep that creativity alive?
The keynote suggests several things. It's about how students relate to teachers. Do they understand the learning goals? It's about the flow of ideas and feedback, especially when they're producing things using these multiliteracies.
Okay.
It's about shared expectations, especially for teamwork and collaboration, empowering learners maybe through scaffolded resources or project-based learning where they have some ownership.
Creating psychological safety is mentioned too.
Crucial. So students feel safe to take risks, make mistakes, maybe do peer assessment constructively, and building self-belief, often through tasks that are personalized, hitting that sweet spot of challenge.
It's interesting that the keynote says young children are naturally good at multiliteracy. They're kind of primed for it.
Yes, primed to learn different forms of language-like communication and languages themselves. It's an innate capacity we should be building on, not squashing.
And all this discussion, these ideas about integration, cognitive benefits, multiliteracies, it connects back to CLIL, doesn't it?
Absolutely. The keynote reminds us that CLIL content and language-integrated learning is a really powerful approach that aligns very well with supporting both language and cognitive development through meaningful content and communication.
So as we kind of pull these threads together, The keynote ends with a really important thought about technology.
Yes, a crucial concluding message. For digital technologies to do good, we have to learn how to use them, always remembering what they can give us and what they can take away.
And it includes the Spanish, too.
Mm-hmm.
Para que las tecnologías digitales hagan el bien, tenemos que aprender a usarlas, recordando siempre lo que nos pueden dar y lo que nos pueden quitar.
It really underscores the need for conscious, intentional use. Technology is a tool, and we need to be smart about how we wield it.
Absolutely. So, wrapping up this deep dive, it feels like we've covered a lot of ground.
We have. The rapidly changing learning landscape, the huge impact of tech on young minds and bodies.
The critical importance of executive function, and what helps or hinders it.
And then the really powerful, multifaceted benefits of language learning and why embracing multiliteracies is becoming so essential.
Yeah, the core message seems to be about finding that balance, yeah. Right? Leveraging technology thoughtfully while really focusing on nurturing those essential human skills, cognitive, social, emotional.
Skills that help young people not just cope, but actually thrive in this, well, hyper-connected, complex world.
Which leaves us, and you listening, with a big question, really.
Thinking about everything we've discussed, what do you think is the single most crucial shift we need to make in education right now to best support young learners?
Or maybe, framing it slightly differently, how can we as parents, educators, as a society, strike a better balance? How do we harness the good of digital tech while mitigating the downsides for our kids?
It's definitely not simple. Lots to think about there.
Indeed. If you want to explore these ideas further, the keynote presentation came from the work found at https.davidmarsh.education. That might be a good place to start.
Worth checking out.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.